The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to The Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Paddy in the car, Pete and Steve. You all right, lads?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Now, Paddy sounds very distant because he's driving 110 miles an hour, hands-free. Where are you going, Pad?
Out the high Wycombe. Dash.
What? Has anyone picked that up?
What? High Wycombe. Yeah, high Wycombe. I think Paddy's got the worst Bluetooth hands-free set ever there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's like...
It's the car. Hello?
What? I think Paddy's doing...
I didn't think you had a car, Paddy. Have you stolen it?
Yeah.
Paddy, are you a part-time taxi driver? Pick it up from High Wycombe. He's from Airport. Over. Right. You sound very quiet, very distant. You are like on a taxi radio signal. Anyway, listen. I had a tweet, right? This is what it says. Hi, Justin. I'm new to small cap investing. Heard you discuss Gfinity on the Weekend Pod. Researched and bought this morning. First third of a full position. Check now, I'm up 20%. Question is, when does scale in further when this happens? Ignore FOMO and wait for it to come back a bit? If a company is worth investing in, you don't need to consider... Oh, that's another thing. So that's a good thing, is it? So does he ignore FOMO? And this was... The trouble is, and my reply was something like, listen, it's risen very quickly. This was like on 2 days ago, okay?
Yeah, he was up about 3p or something.
Yeah, so that day went up 20% in one day, 25% or something like that. Now, Gfinity's done very well, hasn't it? It's got risen very, very quickly, very fast, you know?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
So I said, listen.
I agree.
Yeah, personally, I said, I wouldn't buy more yet because, you know, what's going on now, Pad?
Pad, do you want to mute yourself?
Yeah, mute yourself. on a plane. He's no idea. I just muted himself. What is he doing? What are you doing, Pad? Can you switch it off? It's loud.
Paddy.
He is a taxi driver, isn't he?
He is.
Or an undercover cop.
And he's listening to a radio station now. Pad, mute yourself. I don't want to listen to a tinny radio station by your naffluence. What's he listening to? Oh, there we are. He's gone. He's muted himself.
Oh, there you
right,
go.
Anyway, so I said to this guy, I said, listen, I wouldn't buy here. Having said that, the momentum here is very strong. It could go a lot higher. So, but essentially, even then, the RSI was like at about 80, and now it's like 89, you know? So it's the momentum. That's one thing, you know, analysts and all that stuff never write into, when they cover a stock, they can never account for momentum because they don't know where it'll happen in the stock. The momentum in Gfinity is so powerful, very strong. The volume, the start of last week, the average daily volume on Gfinity, you've got 3.5 million shares. It's now up to 12 million shares a day. And that's the average. Now, yesterday, they had 35 million shares trading. So, it's very powerful, it's very strong, and if you look at the volume there, just pushing it up and up. So this could be one of the stocks that keeps going, it defies gravity, but it's not the kind of, you wouldn't say, yes, buy here, because it's risen very quickly. It's done over 130% since I last first talked about them. So it's 3.6. So he said that about 2.8, 2.6, I think, and it's now at 3.6. So it's another good move up. So I feel bad for him. I didn't say, buy more. But I'd be insane to say buy more here because all shares do have a breather and it probably needs a breather, you know? But, and this is an analogy like Pete, I think. It's like getting to the base camp at Everest, you know? It's not easy to get a base camp. It takes a lot of effort. But once you get a base camp and you've got to take all your kit up there, but once you get a base camp, you're set then. You have a breather for a good couple of days. You wait for the weather and all that stuff, and then you get going again. So then sooner or later...
No. Get the base camp's easy in comparison to the rest of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe it's not there.
Base camp's at the bottom, isn't it? So it's a trek into the base camp.
Yeah, but base camp is still quite high, isn't it? You are at base camp Everest. It's like you're still... And also, you've got to take all your kit up there, and that's where you leave the majority of the kit. So it's not easy because the air is thin...
Okay, but the Sherpas carry the kit.
Yeah, yeah, okay. But what I'm saying is, it takes... it needs... Paddy, turn it off!
You Paddy! Can mute him. You can mute him. Why don't you mute him?
Oh, yeah. And...
I wanted to say something.
Go on, then.
I was just going to say, when you go into base camp, you pay other people to carry all your stuff. Yeah, so how does that work with this analogy?
All right, listen. We're getting bogged down in the analogy. What I'm saying is, right, the shared budget affinity will have a breather. It will, you know, sooner or later. I don't know when it's going to happen because the momentum is very strong. It could do another, but, you know, 20%.
It's really thin on Everest as well, so you can't have a breather.
Shut up.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Give me another analogy. So, I'm not saying it'll drop off a cliff. Of course not. That doesn't happen when you're at base camp. You just have a rest and settle down for a couple of days and go sideways. So, you know, just walk around that area.
Ask for the oxygen.
Yeah, so that's... So, and then you go...
There are cliffs, though. There are definitely cliffs.
Yeah, but not many people... Yeah, but not many people fall off the cliff at base camp. You imagine getting all the way, travelling all around the world, getting all the sponsorship, all that stuff, and said, sadly, down at base camp, he fell off the cliff. It's
like, people do that. You should laugh at that stuff.
Oh, sorry, did they? I didn't realise... Okay. No, it's there we are. It just proves it's a treacherous area. It's hard work getting there. You take all your stuff there. You've got to carry a bit of stuff as well. So all I'm saying is, you know, I think there's a long way to go in Gfinity. I'm going to do a video this weekend saying, if you look at the peers, right, in America, they're 10 times revenue and they're loss-making. And Gfinity is nowhere near that. It's by 2 times revenue, or maybe 3 times max. And it's going to be making a profit soon. And so I just think it's not overvalued, but it's risen very quickly. Now, those two things may fly in the face of each other, maybe contrarian, say, oh, hang on, you're saying... Don't buy now, but it's going to go higher. Yeah, but you could buy now and it could come back 10-15% and then rise again, you know? So I'm just talking about timing on a small scale issue, yes. So
how many times have we seen this on a stock where it's risen quickly within a week and then, you know, it, very high percentage chance that it does pull back for a short period of time before it then rises again? So I think that's your point, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Or even pulls back and stays back for quite a while before then.
Yeah, it does. But I don't think this will happen with this. This is why now, looking at what I do, is to try and find filters with milestones. And because we're heading to that ultimate milestone of break-even and profitability, where they'll be generating real value, plus you've got good news in a coming beyond that, you know, it's the development of the media business. You've got obviously deals on the joint venture with the Abu Dhabi motorsports company there, and all that. So lots of good news come out. The only bit of bad news we'll have, essentially, which is we probably know, is that we'll have the yearly results, which will be loss making, and that'll be about in October. But the margins will be so improved again that you can see that we're heading towards break even. So it'll play into the story, but yes, it's historical because those figures are for the 30th, you know, the year ended the 30th of June, which is just gone. So that's that year there.
And also, as well as there are other news stories, other deals done for the future, that will also have an impact in terms of being a positive outlook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The share price, the share price could be like, a lot higher before October, a lot higher, you know. So it doesn't matter if it's a pull back then, so it doesn't matter. But I mean,
the guy that tweeted you that's new to small caps, but it's a double edged sword, isn't it? It's a great one to have been his first one, but at the same time, it's a horrible one to be your first one because you kind of think, oh, well, this is just going to go to the moon and nothing will stop it. I'll pile in now. And like we're saying, you've got to be cautious because you don't know exactly what's going to happen in the short term.
Yeah, yeah. This is a kind of area, right? It's super hot. Part of the reason why I like Gfinity, and I've been watching it for ages, and I like sort of, you know, esports and that, is because I've got two young kids. Right now, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Right? I've had to do a spreadsheet printout of time on, time off screens, right? So 1 hour on, 2 hours off, doing something else, reading, exercising, and I've got the spreadsheet for them. They love playing games. They love Fortnite. They love watching guys on YouTube playing Fortnite. They love, you know, competing once again in the Fortnite championships. They know more people, names wise, in esports than they do, say, people from the English, you know, football national football side of England or from the Welsh rugby team. They know more people, you know, they're more people famous than them, esporters, than real people in sport. And they are the future. They don't watch TV. The only TV they watch is YouTube via the TV, and that's gamers. So it's the theme, and they're not alone, you know? The figures are massive for gaming for young kids, and that's all they do is watch gaming or watch people game. So you've got BBC doing deals now with Beckham on esports. why are they doing this? Because the figures these people are getting on YouTube are bigger than terrestrial TV. So you know, they have to buy the audience in. So esports is not a flash in the pan. It's the way forward. If you look at the figures around the world, it's massive. The money pouring into it, the interest pouring into it, is going to be a mainstay, a mainstream sport. And I see more. Do you know what? I would prefer to watch two guys racing a Formula One. Having a bit of banter with commentary, having a bit of banter, because there's no danger involved in having a laugh. What you get is some good characters coming through, I think, in the esports arena, who are genuinely good characters. They're good gamers, because you have this already. They have YouTube channels, and some of the guys are quite funny, you know. And so it's a lot more character. I can see it being on TV and being quite entertaining. So I don't think it's a flash in the pan. It's huge. And you look at the money pouring into it. Look at the growth it's getting. You realise it's not as, you know, at the moment it's still sort of peripheral, the kind of thing. It'll be mainstream in 5 years, guaranteed. The money pouring into it, the industry, a bit like Barclays pouring into it, you know, big money, Beckham, all that kind of people. Just the industry is massive, absolutely massive, and it's growing very quickly. You name an industry which is already valued in billions, growing by 24.4% compound annual growth. It's huge. Huge. So if you want to invest in a company,
will be based on advertising and marketing promotions, that sponsorship, sort of stuff, rather than any subscription based model, will it? Or
no, I know, but you get
well,
you got
at the moment. I can imagine it turning into a subscription thing if it became that popular, though.
Yeah, of course. But if you look at where Gfinity thing, they do events, they do joint venture events. They got their websites have gone crazy, which got revenue for, which never had revenue for before. And it's like one of the things, a rising tide raises all boats. Everyone in the eSpace arena will do well. But now, already now, John, they're still quite new, and a lot of companies are burning cash. John Clarkey there, Clarkey from Gfinity, grabbed it by the scruff of the neck, said, we're going to make this company profitable. It hasn't been profitable. And so if you are a profitable esports company with, you know, links to like Formula One, E-Premier League, all the big guys pretty much, you'll be valued, you know, massively. 10 times revenue, easy. And so if you look at Gfinity's revenue, it's about 7.88 million, 10 times that, 80 million. And that's over 10 pence a share. We're what now at 3.6 pence a share. So what I'm saying is there's a long way to go, and that's just a start, I think. You know, it's not down the line. He has bigger ambitions than this. That's in the next couple of years. And like I said, I did say this would double before the end of the year. It's doubled already within a week. So it may get there a lot faster. But what I'm saying is it's timing, isn't it? Short term, it's risen very quickly. You may get burned on a little bit of a spike if you're buying now. I know the FOMO is strong here, but, you know, have a bit of patience. Share buying is all about discipline and the price. You know, if you get a good price. But I genuinely think this is a company I want to be involved with for a while, because I see it has a future. And esports does have a future. You can't deny that. I can see it through my kids. They're obsessed. Absolutely obsessed. Of course, they'll grow out of it, but the younger generation then will be obsessed again. I just think I genuinely prefer to watch a couple of guys messing around doing Formula One, a bit of banter, and a bit of, rather than serious Lewis Hamilton, who's, you know, big ego and getting paid billions.
Well, yeah, and that, the actual F1 over the years, it's kind of starting to get better now, but it's been so poor in terms of competition, and it's just been a big old procession. It was great 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, I used to watch it all the time, but now I'm...
Yeah,
my interest has waned, but whereas you never know.
Paddy's a little rich, they do a podcast on that. Let me say one thing. One of the biggest themes at the moment, right, massive theme in the last 6 months pretty much, has been ESG, right? Environmental, societal and corporate governance. So essentially companies now, and BlackRock with the biggest investment house in the world, they own iShares. They got a whole section on their website. They did it 6 months ago. They said they look at themes, mega trends, they call it, and they're saying that ESG is the biggest theme around today, and it covers everything from, you know, is the company you're investing good to your environment? Is the company environment societally good? You know, is it like gives equal rights to everyone? It's paying people fairly. And also just corporate governance. Is it professional? Either people within the company getting paid, you know, the overall regulations. And if you notice, a lot of companies at the moment, if they can, oil and gas companies, are changing their name to energy companies rather than oil and gas companies. They're changing, quite a lot. And they're edging towards gas rather than oil, because the money is pouring out of oil. Oil is like a dinosaur industry now. You've got the big sort of sovereign governments. Norway, one of the biggest in the world. There are huge amount of billions to invest. They're starting to pull out of oil. And so if you look at Formula One, it's not that good for the environment. You know, they are those things burn a lot of petrol. They travel from city to city. They burn a lot, don't they? I mean, literally, they're picking up a town pretty much and travelling around the world with it, you know, and guzzling petrol. And then you've got the E-Fall one, or E-Sports, it's fine. It's down. See, if you look at it, and don't mark my words, it's a massive movement. It's like at the moment, you've got Boohoo, you know? Do you know, I was chatting for a long time with Russ Mould and Paul Hill on the podcast about, and I'm not saying Boohoo's a fraud, I'm just saying is, frauds, right, always tend to be outperform their peers before they're discovered. And they're the star of the industry, because they've got you know, their margins are above everyone else, and everyone's, how are they doing it? Boohoo's margins are phenomenal. Now, retailers are lucky to get above 10%. Boohoo's are 30, 40%, 50%. And so, how are they doing that? Yeah. And we know how they're doing it. Some of their factories are paying the workers £3 an hour or something like that, you know? So, and that's now frowned upon. ASOS, Next, all that, pulling them off their websites and all that. So it's a huge issue, ESG. And, you know, and I think, again, it's a place for COVID. You know, you can remotely race people around the world on esports. Yeah. It's good to be, it's not bad for the environment. So I think it's well placed in all sectors. But
yeah,
Boohoo, unbelievable, isn't it? We were talking about this a while back. We couldn't believe how it done so well. It bounced back from COVID, and apparently the share price, well, the share price went higher. So how can they do this? I don't understand this. And now how the fall? But isn't it odd? Now we're dying to get in there. And now it's fallen, you're thinking, oh, I don't want to touch it now.
I know, but the story's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, the story has changed. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you see people jumping on it, and I think they're going to be damaged by this unless they...
Yeah.
There's been a whole lot of... there's a company, actually, quite famous for shorting, and they do a lot of deep research, and they question the takeover of Pretty Little Things, all that, and the price it paid, and then the amount of shares given, all that. So there's a murky waters there, and who knows what's in there.
Who owns... Boohoo, what?
Mr. Boo.
Mrs. Who? Come from?
Well, the shareholders on Boohoo.
It's a traded company, yeah.
Yeah. Where did it come? Is it like US, India, China?
No, I don't know. I started off. They bought Pretty Little Things, and they started it. Obviously, they're buying companies, but I don't know much about it, to be honest. But apparently, the deal they did with Pretty Little Things was questionable because they bought the first tranche of it quite cheaply. But gave the owner, I don't know, some kind of, Paul did mention on the weekend, but on the Friday podcast, but gave the owner a lot of shares or something. So it was quite, and then there was a complaint about it a while back, and then they bought the rest of it. They said, they're attributing the revenue from Pretty Little Things to them, but they don't own all of it. And then all of a sudden, the day after, a response to share price dropping. The day after that, on the 28th of May this year, they acquired the remaining 34% stake in Pretty Little Things, which is like, they've done things reactionary, you know, rather than they've been caught out, and then they've changed. Right. And they said, no, we're doing this, we didn't know this. And you're thinking, hang on. I just think, I know people said, well, they didn't know one of their factories was, you know, modern slavery. It was in Leicester, wasn't it? And they were working under conditions that wasn't correct. It wasn't socially distanced and all that stuff. So not only were they not paying them well, they were working in unhealthy conditions. And that's a typical example flying in the face of ESG, you know? It's not environmental. It's not good for society. And so they're breaking all kinds of rules there. And so that's why that's why their margins were beating everyone else. And you find, if you go back in history and look at any company that's been a fraud, I'm not saying Boohoo's a fraud. I'm just saying, any company in history that's been a fraud, they've generally done better than their peers. That's what I like about Ozark. Do you see Ozark? I've watched all that. And but they're money laundering that, didn't they? But he said he said, you can launder only within certain margins. You know, if your business, if you're laundering through a strip joint, and he said, if you launder too much, that business is doing too well. And people, and they know the margins on strip joints are like, what, 20% or something. If your margin is suddenly 50, 60%, you know, how come you're making those kind of margins and everyone else in the industry is making 20% margin?
Yeah.
So even in money laundering, you've got to be careful, you know? There's a standard you've got to stick by. So, yes, anyway. what's your thoughts of guys? It's funny how one share, like Paddy said and Steve, how one share can transform your portfolio, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's very much changed my portfolio. I probably overexposed a little bit in Gfinity, I'm not gonna lie, but it's paid off obviously. And so I'm quite happy about that. It's recovered my COVID-19 loss.
Well, I think, you know, sometimes, like I said, we only put a nominal 10%, no, over, don't go over 10%, if you're not that sure and you don't know the risk too much, I think, you know. You should never go over 10% in any company like an oil and gas or, you know, a clinical phase study trials of a company doing drug trials, because they're highly risky. And so if you crater, if that stock craters, then you've only lost 10%. But generally, if you get a failed oil drill, which is, if it's a wildcat drill, it's probably a 10-to-1 chance of success anyway, so you're gambling. So, and that will create, at least half the share price will come off if it's not a success. So that's why you do that. You know, you basically backstop that kind of risk. But
I think the interesting thing is you can never, and again, it goes back to the, if you're kind of new to the small caps, you can never really predict, well, you can never predict momentum. And it's interesting, your video the other week where you've highlighted three companies, and they've all had good time since that video, or since that time you were talking about it. But it's interesting, isn't it, that like Salt Lake Potash potentially, you know, has, I wouldn't say more potential than Gfinity, but, you know, it could be a much bigger company ultimately, couldn't it? But it's, in terms of timing, it's starting to push up, but nowhere near the sort of momentum that Gfinity's had, for example. So it's kind of like, it's always worth diversifying your portfolio, being in several different stocks, because you don't know which one is going to have that momentum, or, and which unfortunately might not. But,
The one thing to finish it though, right? First of all, it's in a very hot area. People know that. They love to. Secondly, the market cap is a lot smaller. So smaller market caps tend to move faster.
Yeah,
so it's 13 million market cap, whereas, you know, Salt Lake was 100 million market cap. But Salt Lake can still do. Not, well, if you look at it, Salt Lake, you know, is still a multi bagger. Like I said, they're pretty much, you can look off the assumption, 3 to 5 times current value for each lake they open up. And so, you know, they could be 300 million, you know, on this first lake way. And then,
but like, if you're new to small caps, if you watch your video the other week and go, oh, okay, I'll dip my toe into these three companies, then you'd start to see the Gfinity thing and go, well, actually, why am I in these other companies? They're just going very slowly. I'll ditch all my money, put it all in Gfinity, this is going to the moon, and it's all going to be happy. And it's like, well, no, you've got to keep a diversified kind of view, and happily more than three stocks probably. Because you don't know how momentum. That's the unpredictable thing, isn't it? The momentum.
And also,
it's been very impressive.
And also, when one comes back, sometimes it's nice to have another one rising, so it'll mitigate the loss of one or the balancing. But Polarian and Gfinity, like I said, when I look for small caps, loss making stocks, one of the things I look for is a scalable 10 times its current value. You know, and that's one of the reasons. And it may not get there, but you can see. Polarin is, Gfinity is, and Salt Lake Potash is. Now, Gfinity has been oversold, it's been unloved, and it's now a turnaround story. That's why people didn't, you know, there's been a news. First of all, when you get a turnaround story, people don't believe it because it's been around for a while, and they think, oh, yeah, we've seen this before, you know, all the stuff, talk about break even. But then you look at the evidence, and if you say, I broke down those figures, obviously you had to do that in a spreadsheet because they weren't broken down, but I broke down to half segments, 6-month segments, and you could see. Under John's guidance, the margins, gross margin, gone from 15% to 60%. So, you know, 4 or 5 times. So that's proof to me. The revenue hadn't gone down. The margins improved. And he said this is going to continue to happen. And obviously, then the top line will grow. The revenue will grow. Eventually, this year, it'll probably come back a little bit because they've stopped taking, you know, high revenue, low margin stuff. But it may come back a bit. But the profit will go up. Because they're cutting costs, the cost base can be reduced by 60%, and he sticks by that. But obviously, then when they get the new media business up, that'll be generating cash. The revenue will go up, and the margins will improve, and then the profitability will come. So that's happening now. People, you know, may not even be aware of that, and if they are, or the talk of that, but not believe it. It always takes a turnaround longer to. Grab a bit of traction, but people's obviously done. Like someone said to me, "Oh, it's amazing the power you have over small cap stocks." I said, "No, the story was there. I can't sell rubbish, honestly, and I wouldn't want to sell rubbish, and I wouldn't want to try and pump crap, you know, like a lot of Twitter people do. People, there's sharp people out there. They see it and they say, right, you know, I like this, and they jump in. They understand it. If it was rubbish, you know, what do they call it? You can't sell it, make a piss sow's ear out of pig's
Well, also, people would buy in and you should get your traders in and out, wouldn't you? So
yeah.
It's not done that at all. I think people have realised it's
you can't make a horse's nose out of a pig's leg. What's it called? I don't know. I can't make a silk purse
out of a sow's ear.
Yeah, you can't polish a turd. That's it. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, because it stacks up. The sector is hot. The it was undervalued. There was a change in the company where it's going to profitability.
Your point about it being a smaller market cap compared to something like a Salt Lake Potash or whatever, but it's all kind of relative, isn't it? Because the Salt Lake Potash could turn into a multi-billion-dollar company from where it is now, whereas Gfinity, it could turn into several multiples of where it is now, but that it's only a percentage.
The difference is the difference is this. Let's say 1,000 people watch that video, right? And let's say of that 1,000 people, say the volume's gone crazy on it because obviously people like to chase a hot stock. But let's say 10 million shares were bought because of that video. Now, 10 million shares spread across three, so say 9 million shares, so 3 million each in each of those stocks. It would have moved Gfinity more than it would have moved Salt Lake Potash because, of course, you can buy more of the market cap. Yeah. More of the market cap is taken up with that stock, that amount of money, than it would to 100 million market cap. So, why small caps move. Like, you'd have to buy a lot of a small cap, and especially when it's you're a big chunky holder there. There was a few sellers there from the placing, but the placing had happened a couple of months back. So a majority of the churn had gone. There's a few sellers. Once the sellers had gone, it flew, and that's the problem. There's nothing holding it back. So again, it's timing. It's like, everything was in place for it. First of all, the share price, it bumped off them. It bounced from the dash for cash sell-off in March, yes, but it was still at an all-time low, pretty much. They got cash. It's a turnaround story. And I was looking at the chart and everything. I said it ticked my 9 boxes, like Salt Lake did, It ticked all 9 boxes. The chart was right. The business was right. Everything was right. And they'd raised money. There's no need for money. It hadn't spiked. Everything was right in it. I said, look at that. It's a lovely-looking chart. And it was just coming. The 200-day moving average was coming down to the price. And once it pops above that, it's generally very bearish. It's one of those companies I like to hold for. It's a business I wouldn't mind holding for years. Yeah. If it performs, if Clarkey does what he says he's going to do.
If Clarkey delivers. Right, but so Salt Lake Potash is a company where I've put some money in. I would like to put more in now because the more I find out about it, the more I'm reading about it, I'm going, I'd be happy to put more in here. But it has risen. What's your advice? What's your thinking there?
Are
you going to be buying more?
I'm just hoping, right? And this is a silly thing because the big, part of the puzzle missing here is debt finance, right? Debt finance is the final bit of the jigsaw which they, kind of build the processing plants with. But they've been raising money as they've gone. They released news out this week. Let me just get the news up. And it was that it's risen a little bit, isn't it? It's a procurement update. So Lake Way projects are now 90% procured. So all equipment is all there. All key vendor contracts executed. So they're 10% away from, and they're starting to produce next year. So they're way ahead of schedule, they said.
Way ahead. I see what you've done there.
Yeah. And so they're going to be, producing it next year quite easily. Now, there's a lot of people that don't like, I don't know if you've heard of Sirius Minerals, have you? It's seriously burned quite a lot of private investors in this country. Yes. It was a massive potash project in this country. I don't know much about it. I wasn't involved in it. But it was in Yorkshire. And they're talking about, and it flew. It went to a billion market cap. And but then, and people obviously chasing it up. There were stories of guys putting their pension into it who lived locally and all that stuff because it created a lot of jobs. And debt funding didn't happen. Didn't happen at all. And it collapsed. And there's problems with it. And of course, now, I don't know the difference between, but Yorkshire, and just the the population density and the area it's in, and Perth, or just outside Perth, Australia. It's a massive area, Perth. It's a mining area. It's below a mining area, Pilbara. They mine there on big scale. They, like I said, Tony and the guys from Fortescue built that company pretty much, and now it's the fourth biggest iron ore producer in the world. That's massive compared to some of the big companies. So it's a mining district. In fact, you could fit Yorkshire about 1,000 times into that area of things. So it's a different setup, and so there was always environmental concerns. It was serious. I don't know a lot about it, but it didn't play out. And a lot of people got burned. I've had a few people saying, yeah, debt funding never came with serious. And I thought, I know, but these are guys, you know, we're in a mining area in Australia. It's in the middle of nowhere. No one lives there. Whereas the population density of Australia and the UK is a lot different, isn't it? You know, it's like one person for every 1,000 square kilometres in Australia. We're over here, it's one person for every 1 kilometre, probably. You know, it's a different thing. So, but I think
why I'm sorry, I'm not following. Why is the population density relevant?
Because when you're setting up massive production plants and mining areas, you can't do it next to someone's housing estate because there's all kinds of gunk and rubbish and, you know, drilling and noise. Everything's environmentally not sound, you know, next to someone's. So, that's so what. So, in Yorkshire, kind of, you know, in Yorkshire, Sirius Minerals, and they had all kinds of issues already.
Right, sorry.
But I mean, you know, if you look at where, even though there's transport links close by and a little airport close by to Lake Way, so infrastructure is very important, there's only rail tracks where no one lives, you know, no one lives there. And there's no one living there for miles and miles and miles and miles. You're in the middle of the desert, you know, so, and it's like a mining area. So,
and what you're saying is because of that, it wasn't an attractive proposition, so the debt financing didn't.
I don't know, but they're different profiles, you know. Lake Way and all that, completely different profiles in different areas of the world. They're Lake Way and all that, they're in traditionally mining areas. Now, you know, if it's in a mining area, you're more likely. But Tony said to me several times, listen, it's happening. I've been there, there's meetings happening with, you know, these finance guys are on the table. And it's happening. It always takes longer than it always is. You know, you're talking about a 1,000-page documents here that are being passed around through several parties, and the lawyers are going through line by line because they're loaning 100 million or something like that. So, you know, it takes a long time, and his COVID is putting back. But he said, you know, for a couple of weeks it'll be done. But even so, the reason why there's been so many placings is because they've been building as they've been going. So it's like, and that reduces then the debt finance needed. So it's not a bad thing. So I don't know. I know people are sceptical the debt will come, but finance will come, but I'm not. I think these guys have done it before. They've built multiple mines with Fortescue. They know their stuff. They've all got big skin in the game. And did you see that last week? I said, the chairman, you know, he's Equatorial Resources. They got 40 million in cash on the balance sheet. They've loaned Salt Lake Potash. He's the chairman of Salt Lake Potash and Equatorial. They've loaned Salt Lake Potash 15 million via convertible. And there's more to come there. So if they need bridging for, you know, loan for.
Yeah.
It's not a problem there. I just think it'll I don't know. I understand people being skeptical because a lot of people were burnt on Sirius. I just think it's a completely different project, completely different province. And it's there.
There. Yeah.
But if anything, share price wise, if there's any delay on that, you may see weakness, you know? And then you think, well, and Tony is completely convinced on it all happening anyway. So it's almost like these worries play in your mind a little bit, but I just have confidence in those guys.
Yeah, but a cynic would say, well, Tony would say that. But, okay, like I say, I am invested. To an extent, and I'd be interested in upping my stake, but I'm just wanting to see how it plays out. But it's one of those ones where momentum might take over, and before we know it, it's a 40p, and you're like, oh, I wanted to buy it, you know, lower.
It's funny, all three of those shares I talked about, I said three stocks I believe should double before the end of the year. All of them now, the RSI is above 70. So Gfinity, which means that's obviously above 70 is overbought, that means it's quite hot. It may need to consolidate sooner or later. Gfinity is at 88. It was at 90 yesterday. It's come back a little bit. But Polarian, it's 70. So they're all hot. They're all hot to trot. 74. And Salt Lake, which has just gone above the 200-day moving average, which is obviously a very good signal, bullish signal. We'll see. You know, we got a couple of weeks. I mean, if it takes more than a month, there's going to be... it may be delay. But that may hit share price. But then again, they may get it signed and it may rocket then. So there we are. So, so timelines always shift. I remember once on Twitter having six stocks I held, and they all had timelines when something significant happening before the end of the third quarter. I think was it last year or before last? And none of them delivered on the timelines. And so, well, that's the way with small caps, you know, all those kind of industries. That's what happens.
And with COVID and all the rest of it in the world as it is now, delays probably are more likely, aren't they?
Yeah. So,
you've just got to, well, make your own decisions, but kind of have patience, probably, hopefully, in a lot of them. If you believe in what's going on and you believe in the board and all the rest of it, you just got to have patience, I hope.
Sometimes you have to go big, you know. When you see an opportunity, you have to go big.
Yeah.
And that's why, like I said, 10%, it's always evolving. You know, you learn it every time. But, I mean, that 10% rule of thumb is generally for stocks that are quite risky, I think, you know. But if you small cap stocks, the most important thing is a couple of things. First of all, have they got money? Take them to the next milestone, which will generate value. Gfinity did, you know.
Yeah.
Has the share price spiked? No, it hasn't. You know, and those two things on their own, pretty much, you know, and it wasn't a risky industry. You know, it's like a growing industry. So those two things, I like this down here. And so I went a lot bigger than I would normally go on a stock. So, and it's starting to pay off because, yes, it's working. I can see it working. And every time I made a decent bit of money in the last 12 years, pretty much, you know, from the financial crash, it's going big on one stock. And then being early, then de-risk, but still have the confidence. So, you know, have the confidence to still hold. Because if it's, you know, like I said, Gfinity now, what's the market cap? It's literally 26 million.
26,
that is not a lot. If you look at these stocks and look at America, they're all 400, 300 million. You know, they've got little revenue and they're making losses. I mean, Gfinity's here is close to making money, and it's at 26 million. So it's like, you know, it's not, amongst his peers, it's nowhere
it's
near.
It's outrageous.
No, it's not. And let's be honest, if you look at something like hot areas, right? One of the things I've said on my filters is the area in which, if you look at a hot area, hot tech stock, first of all, is the end market commercial, is it quite big? That's essential, really, because that's a flash in the pan if it's not. And I give you an example of Melody VR, right, which is a VR, which, you know, EVRH, that it was. I 10-bagged on that, pretty much, because it had that hype cycle at the start. It said, oh, VR, VR, ooh, everything's going to be VR, AR, ooh, you know, and people got into it. No one's watching music with a headset with a box in their head.
Didn't I say this at the very beginning?
Yes,
this is
you
why
did.
I sold out really early, because you were getting really excited.
No, Steve, like, you sold out too early.
Way too early.
Yeah.
The hype cycle, Steve, you underestimate the hype cycle. So hype, hope, potential, but it's not sustainable.
I know.
Because
to be fair, I didn't sell because of I didn't believe the hype cycle. It's because I was just a bit stupid and
But you made a profit. So
I made a profit just then 10-bagged, and I literally took a profit of probably about 10%.
So what I mean by this is it a hot market? But is the end market commercial, right? Now, I can see them doing well now, we're doing lockdown, just doing normal concerts you can watch. I can see that happening. But the VR with the box in your head, I don't think people are doing that. But
there's talk of it now a bit more, isn't there? Like, who was it the other day?
The fact is that they're pretty much one of the... if you look at esports, for example, it's commercial. You know, people are earning money, they're earning good prize money, people are playing it.
There's a competitive element to it all as well.
Yeah, but the gaming market is very popular. It's millions, billions of kids are playing it.
Well,
you know?
It's addictive as well.
Yeah. But it's like anything, isn't it? I was addicted to cards and collecting cards when I was younger. So this is Melody VR, right? Let me just tell you what the financial results come out recently, okay? So last year in 2018, they turned over 1.1 million. This year, 194 grand. Right? They lost 15 million. 15 million they lost. Their valuation, 70 million.
Yeah.
Explain that. Now, look at Gfinity, 26 million. It turned over 8 million. It made a loss. Okay, last year, 12 million, but that's coming down massively now. They're going to be break even. So we're talking about industries here with a proven commercial big end audience against one that hasn't got one yet or still trying to find one, still trying to pivot towards somewhere where they can get paying customers, concert goers, and they're hooking up with people left, right, and centre. And yet, it's valued at, what, three times? You know, close to almost 2.5-3 times of where Gfinity is. So that, to me, you know, is if you want to talk about hype, you know, there's hype in the esports game, and we are nowhere near. So I'm saying, the share price may come off a little bit of a breather, but there's still plenty to go on hype alone, even without fundamentals, and they've got the fundamentals, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Exciting times ahead.
Bob Mortimer.
I love that.
The train guy, yeah.
Train guy on Twitter. Yes, very good.
Is Paddy still with us?
I don't think so.
No, he's Paddy left. Paddy came left.
Did we work out where he was actually? I know he's going to High Wycombe, but did we ask why he was going there?
He's picked up now. He's got a customer on board. He can't just chat.
Right, okay. Right, yeah. Good point.
Are you doing a video this weekend, Justin?
Yes. Well, did you get my email?
Oh, I did actually. Yes, you did say. Sorry, I did.
It's basically saying, listen, it's risen very quickly. Basically, what I was just saying, but I prove it with pictures. Saying it's risen very quickly. It'll probably have a breather. But this is not the end. I don't believe it'll be anywhere near the end. And if you look at the valuation, it's not overvalued here at all. But it's risen very quickly, so it's the base camp scenario. We're having a breather, maybe. I don't know. Do you know what? It may go up another 30% Monday. I don't know. You know, you don't know. That's the thing. You don't buy or sell shares on oversold or overbought. There has to be other things. So if it's, so with oversold, for example, just buy a company if it's oversold, because it could be oversold for a long time. The share price can keep going down and down and down. Yeah. You wait until that momentum's changed and it comes back. So for example, if it goes below 30 on the RSI, then you wait until it comes back above 30 and it starts to build, get some traction and some momentum, some buyers, and then the trend is your friend, you know? And so don't try and go against the trend, because it's like swimming against the tide. You get nowhere. And you wash out the sea or something.
So your video is going to be on that?
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, don't have FOMO. Don't jump in. There's always opportunity. And, you know, but I can't say whether if you don't buy here, it won't go up on Monday. I'm not, you know, I'm saying is you'll feel how... it's hard to know. What's worse? In fact, someone, I think... How was it? Let me just look on Twitter a second.
That's the thing with momentum, isn't it? Because you could have said that last week and somebody could have bought, or like the guy you were talking about, bought at, I don't know, under 3p early in the week and is now like, 30% up or something. And at that point he bought, you could have argued that was a spike in don't jump in, but he's actually done well because it's continued up. So... Mm. Very difficult to actually call it, and when you've got a stock like that with a momentum like that.
Yeah, in fact, Mark on Twitter, Mark Radders here, said, watching, because he put a bit in GFinity, not a lot, when I sent my initial email out, I think, a couple of weeks back, he said, watching us, in fact, he didn't, he waited to come back a little bit first, then he put some in, he said, watching a small initial investment nearly bag in a week is many ways almost as sickening as watching a big holding fall back.
You
know, he's like not having enough in and watching it really do well, or having a big chunk in and watching something go back. Either way, you think, oh no, you know. So that's the way, isn't it?
I was feeling that with GFinity, even though I overexposed myself, you know, put more in than I would normally, and because I felt pretty good about it, you know, as we were seeing it rise in the early days. And even then, now you kind of go, oh, I should have put more in.
I was thinking, because I have some spare cash in my bank, I was like, I could have just put more in. But then that's a really unsensible thing to do, isn't it?
Exactly.
I put way too much in, right? I put a lot more than I would put in any stock normally. And there was times where I was thinking, I would literally, you know, it's exciting though. It's exciting in the middle of the night. So I wake up in the middle of the night thinking, I think I put too much in there. Because it hadn't started to go, you know. I think, oh, look, if it drops now. But I had some more money. I thought, listen, if it drops back. But I kept thinking, hang on a second, what can go wrong here? I thought, first of all, they've got cash. They don't need to raise cash. If they raise cash, it's not going to be a discount. They've got cash. They're heading towards a milestone of break-even profitability. They're in a hot sector. I like John. I think the box hasn't been ticked is that John doesn't have a huge amount of skin in the game, but he was brought in, basically. So it's not as if he's a founder. The founder still holds about 2%. But I started buying big. I said, listen, no, this is... And I thought before that the mistake I've made when I've had this thought on previous stocks, they haven't gone big enough. And so I went big on this, and it's paid off, you know? But it's almost sometimes saying, you know, weighing up the risk, what can go wrong here? And if you look at it on that side, rather than what can go right, you know, what can go wrong? What's the worst going to happen here? And I thought, if we get locked down again, that's not a problem, because they can operate lockdown. You know, people want to do remote. That's why F1. You know, I said, everything's going towards this. You know, Formula One and e-Formula One hooked up, and the real Formula One guys raced the e-sports guys, and Gfinity was the arranger of that. So, and then now they're going to continue doing that because they realise they're missing a trick not having a regular e-sports sort of calendar. And like I said, so, wait up, news flow. Okay, we got the Abu Dhabi thing happening. That's going to be two events a year, starting this year. So one's going to happen this year. They're obviously getting money. They're monetizing their media sites. I thought, what can go wrong? I said, the negative here.
That activity should be mutually beneficial for both because it'll attract new people to F1.
Yeah, yeah.
And vice versa as well. So,
I will show on the weekend how much interest there are from brands now. Tapping esports companies up, saying we need the presence in this area, and literally they're all realising they're missing a trick here. You know, so some rights holders, sports rights holders, be a bit snobbish about it, saying we're happy. They've realised, oh, hang on a sec, we're missing out a massive young audience here, who could be crossover. It's not exclusive. You know, mutually exclusive. You can watch both. You can do both. You can watch Formula One E or you can watch real Formula One. It doesn't matter. It's a crossover. If the one Formula One is not on one day, but you've got an E Formula One next week, you can watch that. You know, so it's a crossover promotion here happening. So it works. And yeah, so it's that area though. The only risk I thought at the moment is that the financial report from this year will come out showing a loss. We know that because we've had a half-year loss, but the margins will be massively improved. Now, most people don't read that in depth into financial reports. They just look at the top line, and if they see maybe revenue's gone down, they're, oh, big trouble. No, that's part of the plan. They're getting rid of the, you know, there's no point turning over lots of money if you're making a loss on it, you know? Just cut the stuff you're making a loss on, or there's low margin where you can't really make a profit on, and then that's it. You know, like I said, I prefer to turn over 5 million and make 1 million profit than turn over 10 million and make a loss. You know, so it's they're doing the right thing. So that's the only worry I could think of. That's why I took a nice big chunk in it. So I like.
Yeah.
And part of me thinking is, you know what? I've been overly cautious really on lots of stocks recently, and I've held lots of cash on the sidelines, and I've missed out. I've been overly cautious. But you've got to weigh up and think of the risks first, I think, because it's risk reward. And unless you cover off the risks, you're not going to get the reward. Unless you're sure the risks are, you know, tight. Have you seen Boris and said, in fact, you know what I thought, right? We got a little dog now. By the way, I know, talking about Boohoo and fashion, who's going to be the first company to actually brand a face mask?
Hold on. In the space of 15 seconds, you skipped through about four subjects there.
Yeah. Sorry. Who's going to make the face mask? The fashion accessory to have to die for. Surely there's some brand to come out with one face mask and will be that everyone, celebrities will start wearing, and everyone will start wearing them, surely. You know, and you have to pay.
I think the problem with the face mask at the moment, because I had to buy one for work purposes a few weeks ago, and you just don't, like all the reviews on Amazon and anywhere you look, you just don't know which ones are actually the decent ones and ones that are actually effective, because there's no real standards on them, apart from obviously the medical ones, is it?
Yeah. It only prevents spittle, really, doesn't it? I mean, you know.
No, that's the thing. No, the good ones, because I think the ones you generally buy on Amazon and some of the fashion designers are selling, they literally obviously just stop the spitting, and that protects other people if you got it. But the proper ones obviously
protect
you as well.
What's this one? N95 We got those. We got them when we first started lockdown. The ones where you change the filter in them. You got a little plastic thing, and it's a filter. And your washable filters.
Right, and how often are you wearing them?
I don't wear them at all. I haven't left the house.
No.
Have you
left the house since March?
I went to the pub last weekend.
Cool.
It was very safe. Yeah. All done very nicely. Pretty much not a lot, have I? But I'll take the dog out. So, do you know what? Yeah, anyway, dog, right? This is what I thought of, right? Humans, right? I'm not religious, right? I don't believe in that. I think it's a nonsense, to be honest. I think it's odd what people do in the name of religion. I think it's really odd, and I think it's just.
They each their own.
Yeah.
Now, you're not judging.
So we got a dog. It's Cockapoo, right? It's happy as Larry, always happy. You know, if I go to the toilet, number two comes out, it's like I haven't seen it for for a year to wag their tail like a maniac. So I've just been for number two, for heaven's sake, you know? And literally, so happy. Same food every day with a bit of, you know, a bit of kibble with a bit of either chicken in it maybe or a bit of fish. So happy with it. Unbelievable. Loves it. Loves it. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, how are they so happy? And I thought, I don't know, I know why it is. And I thought, we're going camping next weekend. And I said to Lola the dog, I said, looking forward to going camping? I didn't expect a response. She wagged her tail. But she wagged her tail, looked happy with it. But then she has no idea where she's going in the future.
No.
And I thought, that's the thing. Dogs are always present.
That's what I love about dogs. Like, when you're going out, like, if you take them for a walk or something, they don't know whether it's going to be a five-minute walk or a five-hour, like, trek. Yeah, but they're just happy to be out walking.
Dogs are happy with a couple of things in life, right? Food, walkies, attention, and sleeping, pretty much. And, but you don't, if you take them for a walk, you don't know if it'll take you to the vets to put down. They have no idea that it's happy. So what I'm saying is they live in the present. And that's happiness, isn't it? It's actually appreciating what you really have right now, not worrying about. Most people worry. I always remember this survey when I had a Happy Map. Another survey. There's a survey of 1,000 people above the age of 80, right? And the number one thing they did in the survey is what would you change in life? And the number one thing they all said about life was, I wouldn't worry so much anymore. If I had my time again, I wouldn't worry. Most of the things I worried about never came to fruition. I made up things to worry about. If I didn't have something to worry about, I'd think of something. It'd have a void in my head. I had to have something to worry. So those little worries and niggles and thoughts we have, you should never worry about it. Dogs live in the present. You know, they have no thought of a greater being above them or going to heaven or hell or dying. They don't care. They live in the present. And they're always wagging
their... They
don't have a to-do list. No, they don't care about that. No. All they care about is food. Pretty much, lovely. You know, walk. Yes.
The best one about dogs, I think Johnny Vaughan said it once. It was dogs in lifts. You know, so they go into a lift, right? And they're just like, what are they thinking? Like, oh, going into a cupboard or something. And then the doors open, they come out, and they're like, what? It's a different place. What must they think? Go into this cupboard, come out of a cupboard. What? The world is completely changed.
That's a plucking trick, I know, But
that, they just go, oh, well, whatever.
Paddy just tweeted, great podcast, lads. Yeah. Well, maybe you know, block off your Saturday morning taxi shift, you know, take an hour off there. And one final thing, I saw this yesterday. Do you see that Boris Johnson now saying he wants people to go back to work? He said, as careful as possible. It's very important that people should go back now, if they can. I think everybody is sort of taking the stay at home if you can. I think everybody is sort of taking the stay at home if you can. Seriously, he said. So I think some people have loved work. I love staying at home. I love not going to work. He said. So he said, can you all go back to work now, please? Because some people have suffered. He said. But some people. He said. Some people. This is his quote. Some people loved it. I mean, let's be honest. Some people have actually loved it. That's what he said. Yeah, because you was putting the fear of God into people. They dropped down dead and all that stuff. They went out. When actually we know now, I actually went on the NHS website, Pete, after you said those stats a while back. I have to check this for myself. When you said less than 400 people below the 60 have died. But 380 of those anyway had a pre-existing health condition, and probably the other 19 did. But I looked it up, and I went in there. It gets even worse, really. But below the age of 40, and it's obviously a lower... Less than 230 people have died, and they've pretty much all had pre-existing health conditions. So 230 out of 50,000 people. So we now know pretty much, we didn't know this at the start, I know, and it's evolved the story, and we know a lot more about the virus than we did previously. So before we didn't really know who was killing, the profile of people who was killing it. But now we know it's generally the people they pushed from the beds in hospitals to care homes, people with dementia, and all that kind of people with pre-existing health, diabetes, you know, extreme diabetes. Those are the people it hits. The general working population, it doesn't at all. So we need to get back to work.
That's it. Of the fear thing has been overdone, unfortunately. You know, we've got to respect the virus. You've got to, but it's in so many for so many people. They're so fearful. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, it'll change. But Cahill, you know, Frail from Open Orphan, he told me this off on the podcast. He said, "Listen. I've chatted to a lot of people in the industry about this." He said, "It's playbook. What they do at the start of a virus, they don't know much about it. So you've got to get people off the streets. You've got to stop the spread. You've got to break that connection first and foremost." He says two ways of doing this. He said, first of all, what you do is you either take the guns to the streets, you know, get the army out there with guns. He said, obviously, we don't do that. China would probably do that more. Or you put the fear of God into people that you're going to drop down dead. So it's as effective. But then, so trouble is then, you've got to, when you discover a bit more about the virus, and you realize, oh, it isn't as deadly as we think, we've got to try and reverse that fear. And then it takes a while because people psychologically have been damaged. So it just worked too well, you know, and that's the thing.
In all of this, though, the thing I find most annoying, and it's probably because there isn't an answer, but probability hasn't been talked about, a perspective hasn't been talked about, because what are the actual chances of you catching it? You know, like this, I mean, I know we have to take precautions, but to an extent, like I think the actual chances are relatively really small, and so I know there's a chance. Like the three pubs or whatever they have to close now because of last weekend, and okay, fine. But that's three pubs out of how many pubs opened last week? Thousands. You know, it's got to keep perspective, got to understand probability. But I know it's easier said than done because there isn't. We don't know what that probability is, but it is small. But anyway, there we are.
In fact, you know what? As I talked, Paddy just said there. And you said, yeah, looking forward to litigation from Boohoo. Yep, Justin will have to use all his GFIN profits to fight that. Listen, it's already going on. There's a shorting company there are really bringing up a lot of mud and dirt. And let's be honest, one of their factories has been operating below par. You can't, pay people £3.50 an hour and have them in cramped conditions when COVID is going around. And there's a thing here. I just tweeted that out to you, Paul, who's on the podcast on Friday. Said if this allegation proves to be true, it could be obviously nuclear for both Boohoo and the founding Kimani family. A co-founder of fashion retailer Boohoo has links to a factory in Leicester accused of paying staff less than the minimum wage. So when they said we didn't know about that factory, if it's true now that we did know about that factory, then they're in a bit of trouble. So it's the more that's been looked into here, the worse it's looking for Boohoo. And we're saying, and listen, that I will be right at the end of the line of being litigated in the school. There are people out there saying it's an out-and-out fraud. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the reason why they've done well is because, obviously, they discovered some of their factories, they're good margins because some of their factories are paying £3.50 an hour. So even though they say they didn't know about that, maybe they didn't, but that's why they were doing so. They must have realised they were doing a lot better than any other retailer at one point and think, why are our margins so good then? You know, when Tesco's is like 3% or ASOS is like 3% and ours is 50%. Why is that happening? So,
how much of that has been proven as we stand here now? I don't know.
The margins are there to be seen by anyone. You can get the financial reports.
No, the claims about the wages and all that. I don't know if that's.
All right. All right, boys. Let's stop there, shall we?
Absolutely.
I think we've done enough there. Thanks, Pad, for your contribution. It was valuable. I think the best so far from Paddy this week.
Yeah.
Can you say something? Thanks, Pad.
I thoroughly enjoyed Paddy's bit. Yeah. My guest part. I like.
For the best he's done. All right, then, boys. Have a nice weekend. Any plans? Steve, that was your last, wasn't it? Dan, you didn't do it last night, did you?
No, last the week before.
I did laugh. It's an offshoot of Pete's joke, really. But I was sitting there for ages. Steve said, "When's he coming on?" But Pete's joke on Thursday was, "No one in my neighbourhood is clapping on a Thursday. You know, ignorant sods or selfish sods." I thought, "Can you carry on, Pete? It'd be funny just to stand there." Yes, come on. Yep.
I did an extra long clap on Thursday night. Yeah, just to all the neighbourhood don't seem to be bothered about it.
Them, that's it. There we are. Any more plans, Steve? Did you miss it, Steve?
Well, not really. No, I had a cup of chilli and some red wine last night.
So keep drinking,
So I carried on drinking, which actually wasn't the plan.
Are you allowed out in Wales now? You're not allowed 5 yards out from your front doorstep. 5 yards.
Yes. We're allowed out now, and it's unlimited travel, which is good.
Oh.
Pubs don't open for another couple of weeks, indoor.
Yeah. But the beer gardens and stuff are open, aren't they?
No, they're not, because most pubs have announced they're not going to open. So,
why?
Yeah, a lot of the big chains, like Brains, it's in Wales, they basically said they're not opening anything until they're allowed to open inside,
That's lack of brains, isn't it?
To be fair, though, there's not, other than, your probably more country kind of pubs, you know, not a lot of the city pubs have beer gardens to accommodate them, so why would they open?
Well, that's why, the country pubs, restaurant pubs, they're okay, because I mean, generally people don't get absolutely off their face in those places. It's not like kissing and hugging people and loud music, shouting into each other's faces, spittle going everywhere. That's the kind of pub you want to avoid, isn't it? You know, so yeah. But you're allowed to open pubs. No, pubs can be open, but you must not open your doors.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Can be open, but don't serve anything.
Yeah, don't keep the doors locked. People are not allowed to speak. Who is that guy?
It's bizarre. Obviously, England, everything. But they're not opening anything in Wales until the 3rd of August.
Wales!
It's a bit of a power trip, isn't it, really? But anyway,
Wales is now closed. We're going to put the Severn Bridge tolls back up, but we're going to charge you £1 billion to get in, and everything's shut. We are closed.
Are you boys going to take advantage? I'm just actually looking at the 50% off restaurants that have signed up for that deal.
Yes, I'm going to take advantage of that. There's going to be a huge amount of fraud on that, isn't it? I'm not going to put my finger in any business or any area, but I can imagine friends, close friends are saying, yeah, Billy for that, I'll do that, I haven't been in, just different chain name changes and all that, just billing themselves for that money all the time, you know? And, Jack Charlton has died.
Oh, that's a sad end to the podcast.
85. I'm just going to go back to that. I think there'd be a lot of fraud in that, 50% off, I think. A lot of fraud. It'd be easy with a mate to the restaurant, you know, saying, just make up names, just I've been here, not serving any food, just claiming from the government their take. There'd be a lot of fraud in there, but I suppose that's what you have to do, you know, to get the economy going. Anyway, here we are.
All right.
On that side.
Right, now we're finishing. Right, okay.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye. The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.